I wanted to start out with clarifying, because I've been getting a lot of calls and a lot of questions about different components of ESPRT. But I think the main one that I've been hearing is, what patients can the behavioral health consultant see? And there was some clarification sought from, because I know Dr. Parks was telling everyone to see everybody, and Dr. McCaslin from Medicaid was saying, no, only the health home patients. So the statement that we've put out is that we want you to screen all health home patients and others as time and resources permit in the designated medical settings. So the behavioral health consultant is to see the health home patients, and if they buy extra time, like with the $30,000 that we're going to be contracting with the agencies for, they can buy some extra time to see some of the other patients within their organization. So is that a little clearer for everybody?
Yes.
Good. I think Matthew was going to go over a couple things.
There are a few things that I wanted to point out. We've gotten some questions on ESPRT, and I wanted to mention a couple of common questions and mistakes that people are making. The first question is, you know, where people write things. For example, if somebody refuses to participate, how does that stuff get recorded? And for each patient, on the top left of the menu, on the top of the menu on the left, there's a button that says notes. When you click on that, you can write free text notes, anything that you like, and that's where you would put that kind of information. Or if you've got other sorts of things that you want to say and remember about that particular patient, that's the place to put it. It puts us, you know, it's puts your name and a timestamp in it and allows you to put in whatever you'd like. So give that, you know, and you can take a look at it and see what it looks like for anybody as well. The second thing is, when you are, after you've logged on the left-hand side, you have the opportunity to select a site and location. So make sure that you select the site and location where you are located. You should only have access to your sites and locations and the test site and location. That's the way the security is set up. If you see more than that, you should let us know, but that should be just your sites and locations or the test site and location. The final thing has to do with adding new patients. One of the things, when you add a new patient, you enter their name and ID number and do a search. You need to make sure that the box that asks for the search date on the top next to the ID number, there's a drop-down box that gives you the opportunity to limit it by dates. You need to make sure that that is set to all when you do the search for adding a new patient, because you need to look through all of your data to make sure that this person isn't already in there, so you don't have to enter them again. If you don't have all selected there and do a search, then the Add Participant button will never light up, even if you get no one on the list returned, even if it doesn't find anybody matching it. So you've got to search for all of the dates. Are there any questions about those or any other ESPRT-related questions?
I noticed yesterday on just trying to do the practice, and I had it on test.
Uh-huh.
And I could not add a new participant. Like, that button wouldn't pop up to add one. So put in the participant's name, hit search, and then that would have popped up?
You need to make sure that you have all selected in the time limitation box to the left. So you enter their last name, their first name, and an ID, And then the next box, the drop-down should say all.
It was. I had that.
Then you should send me an email, or actually send me an email, and we will. You can give us a call, and we'll talk about that, and talk you through what you need to do, and see what the deal is.
Okay.
So my email is matthew.hile at mimh.edu. And when you're on the website, if you want to see if you look under the BHC's tab for support, all of our email addresses and phone numbers are listed on that page.
Okay.
So there's a list of three of us you can talk to about that particular issue.
So how is everybody doing with Easburg? Are you practicing? Have you entered real patients yet? Or where does it stand?
Well, I couldn't do anything, so.
You tried, but you couldn't.
Right. And what I did was actually click on an old test patient and try to do it over it.
Oh, okay.
You know, just kind of a little bit. But there are so many different, there was a lot more things filled out than what we went over on the training. Like different screens and different things. Like there was like, you know, over on the left, if you click on them and stuff, like all of them were filled out. And so, I don't know. I guess I was confused on what one we're supposed to do, or if we're supposed to do all of them, or what.
Easbert will limit what it is you do and only require you to do what is necessary. If you want to look at a briefer, what it sounds like is that you got someone who has a brief coaching or referral. If you want to look at someone who is more typical, in the search list that is returned, you will see a column called RX. And click on somebody who has a BE, a brief education, listed in that column. And that'll give you just the few assessments that we require for the brief education. And that's where most of your patients will fall.
Did somebody go on mute or something? We're hearing music. Hello?
Radiologists and lab technicians all under one roof. Swope health control.
It's
somebody at Swope.
It was music and then it said Swope, because we're getting your background music.
Oh, sorry. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Sorry.
While we've got you there, how are things going at your place? Are you?
Oh, everything is going okay. I had an opportunity. Well, I did have an opportunity to use Esper, but because I was having a few issues adding the client, she had to go, so I'll have to enroll her at a later date.
Okay.
But for the most part, I've done some testing, and it seems to be okay.
Okay, good. Mike at Skaggs, I think we've been getting some from you.
Well, actually, you're getting them from the ED. And it's the Burl staff who are doing those.
Oh, okay. Have you entered any?
No, I've been actually playing around and creating some test patients.
Okay.
Just to get a sense of what it looks like. I'm going to be in 7 different clinics throughout the 2 counties we serve.
Uh-huh.
And so I've been working with the clinic managers to figure out how we're going to do this.
Hit the wrong button. I'm sorry.
Sure.
And so I think we have a plan set up, and we're going to start next week where I'm actually going to go live with actually seeing patients for this.
Good.
Somebody's been doing it at a Branson Family Medicine Clinic. Is that the Burl staff too?
There shouldn't be anybody who's doing it live at Branson Medicine Clinic, Family Medicine, because that would be me.
Well, there are 44 that have been entered.
You know, I think what's happening is they're not hitting the ED, or there's not an option for the ED. Well, there it is.
There it is.
There is.
Yeah. So they may not be hitting the ED because that's where all of these have been done.
Aha. Okay.
What's the ED option? What's ED?
Okay, that is that's their emergency department. So that's
okay.
One of the things that you can look at on eSBRT, there's a report menu, and there is a site performance option there, and that will show you all of the assessments that have been done and the status of those, the number that are positive, the treatment recommendations that have been made for each of your, for the whole site, and for each location. So that's a good way. That's how I was able to look at this and figure out how many people had been, were supposedly at Branson Family Medicine.
Oh, that's kind of cool. I just did that.
So I need to change those Branson Family Medicines to the ED?
Those are all ED folks, yeah.
Okay. We will take care of that.
Yeah, Esther and Marla are the ones who are doing those.
Okay.
For the rest of you that probably didn't understand some of that, the eSBRT grant has been around for 4 years now, and we've already been at some sites, and Skaggs is one of those newer sites that we're at, but we have some of our own grant-funded health coaches in their emergency department there, and that's why we're getting the difference in the two kinds of patients being screened there. Jordan Valley, how are you guys doing?
We really haven't started doing them yet. We're kind of organizing how to identify the patients, but we anticipate starting pretty soon.
Yeah, you were just at training last week, right?
Correct.
Who else? Truman, are you still there? Jake?
Yes, we're still here.
How are things going there?
Slow. We've got it in the electronic medical record.
Good.
The nurses aren't doing it when they're rooming the patient. They're trying to get the the nurse care managers to do it when the patients. And there was a little confusion with that because then they were doing it over the phone, but then they weren't in the clinic to do the. To do the assessment when they screen positive. So now we got the message across to them that it needs to be done in the clinic so they can get us to do the assessment. I was the only behavioral health consultant until just recently in four clinics. So now that Harley's on board and getting through orientation, we're going to have a little more manpower to do some of this. And we're thinking about maybe being a little bit more proactive and start doing the screenings as a way of getting Harley kind of into the clinic.
Okay. That's one thing that I've had a lot of calls about, too. You don't have to screen every patient that comes in that day. You can taper your population in over a year's period of time if you want. You could attach the screening to a yearly physical or some other yearly thing that happens with the patient and taper them in because, you know, eventually you will get them all and it's a yearly screening. So don't think you have to get everybody that day.
Good. That's good information. The other thing is, I remember hearing in the training that there's a time limit between the screening and the assessment that it has to be done within 24 hours, something like that?
No, there's no time limit. The only thing is if you don't screen them within 30 days.
Yes.
Go ahead.
It really needs to be at least within 30 days.
Within 30 days?
Yeah. Otherwise, okay, yes.
And is there any issue, because there was a few they started doing over the phone, but my thought was is they didn't have the standardized drink information in front of them when they were answering the questions. Does that present a validity problem?
You just need to be descriptive.
Yeah.
Because we do the assessment. We do those over the phone.
Oh, okay.
You may want to say how many ounces is in a standard drink or something like that just to give them a
tell them how many ounces, yeah.
Point of reference.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. So maybe I could tell the nurse care managers that if they want to screen them over the phone, as long as they have an appointment within the next 30 days, that's above board. Because I was getting these assessments, so they didn't have an appointment for 3 months. They don't even have one scheduled yet.
Yeah.
But you know, maybe they can do it over the phone as long as they get them an appointment.
Within
them in the clinic.
A month, yeah. That would
okay.
be good.
Yeah.
Great. Thank you.
May I ask a question? I just need clarification. This is Robin at Swope.
Sure.
Just as the gentleman just stated, I'm kind of sort of having the same issue. The initial screening was done by the nurse case manager, but I wasn't able to do the complete assessment. Are you saying that we can do that over the phone within 30 days, or must it be in person?
No, you can do it over the phone.
It's preferred in person, but over the phone's okay.
Yeah, the handicap you'll have there is if you're going to provide a brief education, you won't have that personal feedback report to give them.
Right.
But you can talk about it and then mail it to them.
Okay.
You could do it that way because that's really impactful for a patient to see that report.
Okay.
This is Bruce, and just a note on phone follow-up. We do that as well, but it is really inefficient. You spend a lot of time making calls, leaving messages, and so forth.
Okay.
So this is Michael over at Skaggs. I have a question. Is the expectation that we screen everybody in the medical home?
Yes.
In a year's time frame?
Yes.
Okay.
Assuming they come in within the year.
Well, if they're part of the health home, they
yeah.
will be.
Clarify, you mean all health home patients, not all patients that come to the health home?
Yes.
One of the things that I heard that I almost took as a caveat or a loophole is I think the phrasing was within resources and time. I mean, like the first time you said it, I keyed into that idea that, you know, within resources, like for instance with us, with right now just two behavioral health consultants in four clinics.
Well, that pertained more to the other patients. You are supposed to try and see all health home patients. And if you can't, that'll give us some good documentation to advocate for additional behavioral health consultants.
Gotcha. Oh, and one more question while I got your attention. The piece where with the certain Social Security numbers that we fill out the patient contact information for.
Right.
Do I remember hearing a date where that part's only going on to a certain date?
No, that's continuing throughout the grant.
Yeah.
Okay, I thought I remember hearing July or something.
That'll continue as long as we have the grant funding.
Okay.
And I was going to have Rita go over a little bit about the follow-up because I don't think that was real clear to everyone. So, Rita, do you want to?
Yeah. We've been getting questions about consent. So the only time, because we receive federal funding, we have to collect GIPR data. And part of the requirements is when we collect this data is that we have to follow up on 10% of the people, so that's where the 50 to 59, 10% of the people who get a brief education, brief coaching, or referral to treatment. And those people, you need to fill out the locator form with contact information. There are contact forms in the packets that you received, locator forms. On the back of those locator forms is a consent to contact. We need to have a signature giving us permission to contact anybody that they listed in case we can't get a hold of them. We found a lot of times people's phone number changes, they move, so we have a hard time finding them to collect that six-month follow-up data. So we ask for collaterals, and we need to have the patient sign giving us permission to contact those people. And if you, and we do have instances where the locator information is collected over the phone, but what we do is we have them tape the verbal consent, because we're just talking about you having doing some of these over the phone. And if they do happen to fall into the 50 to 59 Social Security range, we ask that you ask that if they'd be willing to participate and then collect the information over the phone. So are there any questions about that?
Rita, is that 6 month follow-up the GIPRA?
Yes. We ask this, a lot of the same questions that we ask at intake. But yes, it is that they get a $20 gift card for participating when we get a hold of them.
Okay.
And we do that here. You know, collect the data and then send the card to the patient.
Okay, so at 6 months, the VHCs are not having to do the GIPRA, the follow-up. You guys are.
That's right.
So we don't need to worry about it.
No.
But we can, do we tell them about the $20 gift card?
Yes.
Or inform them? Because I know it's if they're Social Security numbering and that. So if they fall in that range, we can just let them know in 6 months. Someone may be contacting you, and if you complete that, you'll get the $20 gift card.
Right, but you have to have them fill out the locator form, or go over the locator form to collect information about who to contact if we can't get a hold of them.
And sign the consent.
Okay. So our responsibility is just to inform them. Have them sign the consent and fill out the locator.
Right.
Yes. And they only qualify if they get a brief education, brief coaching, referral to treatment, and their Social Security ends in 50 to 59. And that's we collect the GIPRA at 6 months, and that's how we can prove to the government that there have been changes in their use patterns in the past 6 months. But one thing we've learned is when we introduce this, we don't mention government. We just, you know, we'd like to get your feedback on how this is working, so we'd like to contact you in 6 months, because some people are put off when they hear government. And I was also going to mention, when the lady who mentioned that there were a number of assessments on the side when she called up a test patient to look at, when we went through this, most of what you will do are brief educations. So we only did the brief education because we had such limited time. But there are additional assessments for brief coaching and referral to treatment, which is why we ask that you practice and go through and learn the sequence of the questions.
Any other questions out there?
I just want to go back to the 30 days after, to do the assessment after the pre-screen is positive.
Uh-huh.
It's been 31 days. That means they need a new pre-screen, the person's invalid, or?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. Thank you.
And probably what will happen is the system will delete those.
Okay.
Automatically.
Okay.
I think additionally what we wanted to talk about, Mary, are you on the line?
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yeah. Do you want to do a little bit about the introducing the topic to the patient?
I'm not sure how far to go with this because it sounds like most people haven't really started yet.
Okay.
So, but if you remember during the, not the first training, the big training in Jeff City, but most of you got a copy of a motivational interviewing workbook for your site. And the material that I'm just going to give you a little bit of information is in Chapter 7 of that workbook, if you want to go back and refer to that. It's opening a session or topic. And so sometimes people are a little concerned about telling the patients that they have a problem. I don't know if that rings true for you all or not, or if you've gotten to that point. But there's some strategies in that chapter for doing that. And one of them is just to do some agenda setting and just be straight up with it. You know, we've just got a few minutes to talk, and I've got a couple of things I need to go over with you, and then give them the personal feedback form. Because you want to do that first. You don't want to save the personal feedback form until after you've done the education. You want to review that with them so that they can see how they rated and what their responses indicated. Sometimes patients have other things they want to talk about, too. Don't want to or dismiss that, but you want to make sure that you're clear and say, you know, well, that's important, and if I can help you with that, I will, or I'll find a referral for you. Let's make sure that we mention that before you leave.
Which chapter are you referring to again?
It's Chapter 7. It starts on page...
And which book? I'm sorry, which book?
The Motivational Interviewing, Building Motivational Interviewing Skills.
Skills. Oh, okay.
It's the workbook.
Okay, the workbook. Got it.
Okay. So another strategy is to normalize behavior. And it doesn't mean to say your risky drinking is normal, but to put it in a parameter. Like, well, some people drink one beer a day, some people drink 24 beers a day. Can you tell me what your drinking behavior is like? So that you're putting it in a parameter and you're not accusing them of anything. You're giving them some ranges and that kind of normalizes it. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay. You can also offer a concern. You know, you have this personal feedback form, and you're reviewing it with them, and then you say, you know, can I share what I have with you? And you would say, you know, the levels that you're indicated in your screening and that are showing up here put you at a lot of risk, and I'm concerned for your health. What do you think about that? Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. And if anybody is interested, we could set up a call to go through some of these things in more depth. Couldn't we, Barbara? That would be...
Oh, sure.
You know, I'd be happy to do that.
Well, let me ask you about one thing, Mary, because I got a couple calls in this regard. The pre-screen has been done and the patient's positive, so they're going to the behavioral health consultant for the assist and whatever service is indicated, but the patient gets to them and refuses. What should be the introduction to why they're seeing the BHC and maybe a more friendly manner to get them to participate?
You know, I would normalize it and say, everybody's filling out this pre-screen. You know, those are, is asked a few questions. I don't know if they're filling it out or if the person that rooms the patient is asking the questions and indicating it. It may vary by setting, but say, you know, you were asked a few questions about some risky behaviors, substance abuse, and alcohol, and
since you had a positive response, we just want to ask a few more questions, or we need to ask a few more questions, just to clarify, to see if you are at risk or not.
But I think it's also important, though, that we don't just say, we're just going to ask you a few more questions. I think prior to starting it, that the patient needs to know an approximate time, because I can see if you're just saying that and you're about halfway through, they're like, how much longer is this going to take? You know, I've got somewhere to be, blah, blah, blah. I think they need to be fully informed the length that it's going to take.
I think you would have to give them a range, because depending on how they respond, be over really quickly.
Right. But, I mean, give them an indication of how it could be, you know.
So just letting them know that this assessment could take up to 15 to 20 minutes. And ask them if they have the time. If not, then I guess schedule a time when they have the time, I guess. Is that what you're saying?
You know, in my opinion, this is Barbara, the more excuses you give them, the more reasons they have to back out of doing something. So we've always used this as, you know, we go in and say, this is just, I'm one of the healthcare team members, and I'm going to ask you a few questions about this, and you just roll into it. They'll stop you if it's too long or if it's, you know, they've got somewhere to go. I'd rather not give them options up front of not doing something.
No, I think I'm sorry, this is Robin.
That's okay.
When I have started doing basically the assessments, the expert intake, I mean the initial assessment, as well as the depression, tobacco,
sure,
all those other things, and I explain to them that this is part of the program and to make sure that, you know, your health, all aspects of your health are being addressed.
Right.
Now, the part that I foresee having a problem is that when I do that prior to the provider coming into the office, because
right,
that gives the provider some information.
Sure.
But if they test positive, then that means that I have to take them from that exam room and I have to bring them into my office. And then that's when the time thing gets really tricky, because they want to leave. And then I've said to them, well, this may take 10, 15 minutes, and one person was just kind of hesitant. It's a lot of time.
Is there a reason that you can't continue to see them in the exam room?
Because the provider needs the room.
Okay.
And secondly, the expert is on my computer.
Okay.
The expert is on my computer. It's not on all the provider's computers. Does that make sense?
Uh-huh.
You know, this is Mary. I think I would do, like Barbara said, just flow right into it. And if they express some hesitation, then you can say, oh, well, sure. That makes sense that, you know, you don't have time. Would you like to come schedule an appointment to come back, or would you like to do this over the phone? Give them a choice.
Okay.
And to do it, and how to do it, not necessarily do it or not do it.
Okay.
I think what Robin was saying is what I've heard at, this is Dawn, what I've heard from other sites is the expert isn't available to them in the exam room, so they do have to leave the exam room to go into the assist, so there is a little bit of a break there.
Are these stationary computers?
Mm-hmm.
So you can't take it with you to the room or anything like that?
No. It's a PC.
Another option that might be a little more tedious for you, but easier for the patient, would be to do it on paper and then enter it when you get back to your room.
But it's still a little... Yeah. It's still time. Because the provider, I mean, I had a provider kick me out the other day.
Sure.
So it's all about, you know, making sure that the room is available, because they're getting patients in and out.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
So I understand what you're saying about the paper, but it's still time, and that and the provider needs that room.
Yeah, absolutely. We don't want to interfere with that. Mm-hmm. And how far away is your office?
Oh, it's not far.
Oh, okay. Okay.
It's in the same department, so it's just steps away.
Because if you need computers, there is money. I mean, that $30,000 that we're giving each agency, some of that money can be used for computers. So,
you mean like a laptop, a traveling laptop?
Yeah, if you wanted that, talk to your health home director or whoever you know completed the budget to see maybe if you can get a laptop. Any other questions out there? Don, are you hearing any other things that we could discuss that need to be discussed? Or Ron, you either?
Well, just to add to that last issue, is a challenge for everybody in terms of space and having time, whether it's to work with an expert or it's working on other issues. And there's no easy answer to that because not everybody has an office nearby.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And it's just part of the challenge of working collaboratively.
Right. Okay, I want to just run through the roster and make sure I got everybody who's actually on the call. We've got Skaggs, Truman, Swope, Jordan Valley. Anybody else join us?
Yeah, this is Susan from Cox Hospital, Springfield.
Okay.
Sorry.
Hi, Susan.
I had a meeting that ran over.
No problem. How are things going with you at Cox?
They're okay. It's been a challenge. I've been doing the screenings for about a month now.
Okay.
And just time, like everyone was saying, it's been kind of a challenge, but we're getting there.
Yeah, and I think, it's going to take some time for you to develop your being comfortable with the whole screening process, too. You're learning that as well as trying to get the work done. So once you've got a few of these under your belt, it'll go smoother and actually quicker, too.
Yeah.
You having any computer-type problems or anything, Susan?
Yeah, my situation's a little different because I don't have an office in the clinic.
Okay.
And my office is upstairs, so I'm fighting for space all the time, and I don't have a laptop. And so getting, like they were talking about, trying to be in the room, it's taking up the room that the provider needs. But also trying to figure out, how to get the screening, the pre-screen, and the, because I'm doing the pre-screens pretty much. My nursing staff isn't able to do them.
Okay.
So I'm doing the pre-screens. I'm doing pretty much all of it. So.
Are they going to put it in their EMR?
We're working on it.
Okay.
We're in the middle right now of switching over another computer system-wide, so that's taken focus.
Oh, yeah, that would.
Very, very time-consuming for them.
Okay. All right. Well, anybody else have any other questions? All right, I guess we'll conclude the call for today. Hopefully we can set these up on a more regular basis and have you all submit some questions to us beforehand if we have if you have issues that you want us to discuss. So I will end the call. Thank you all very much.